This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for more revelry as the countdown to Carnival begins, or a milestone anniversary for a young music festival, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. With the ringing in of a new year in New Orleans, it signals another season of merrymaking as the PPP, the Funny 40 Fellows, spelled with PH, gear up to take their 12th night streetcar ride, announcing the start of a new carnival season. Peggy Scott Laborde is captain of the carnival crew. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Diane. This is tradition.
You know, I don't know about you, but I can't believe another Mardi Gras season is already upon us.
Yes, and of course, 12th night is 12th night, January 6th. That doesn't change, but this is a longer Mardi Gras season because Mardi Gras culminates in March 5th.
Well, longer is better when it comes
to
celebrating in New Orleans.
And, we know that 12th night's getting to be a busier and busier night, but we're still there to announce officially, if you will, that Carnival is here. And for those who have not had a chance to come out and visit us, we all gather on 12th night. This time it's a Sunday at the Willow Street Car Barn, and we don't have a parade per se. Our vehicle is the historic New Orleans streetcar, the St. Charles Avenue streetcar. And what's fun is that a lot of people come just to see us off. And many families bringing their precious little children, and sometimes they're dressed in costume. And then we are, of course, dressed in costume, but we sort of hang out around starting about 6:15, 6:20, and then at 7 o'clock we leave promptly. But in the meantime, we've got the Storyville Stompers who will be boarding our streetcar with us, and we kind of boogie around the streetcar.
A lively celebration.
Absolutely. And we'll have a few favors, official favors.
Is there something special that the Funny 40 Fellows is known for?
Well, actually, the whole favor aspect is fairly new to us, and it's P-H-A-V-O-R-S, by the way.
Of course.
Right, of course. We have a wonderful logo. We have our royal artist, Tom Hackett. Our mascot is the owl, which goes back to the 1800s and the original Funny 40 Fellows and the carnival bulletins. You know, those wonderful announcements of parades, which still exist for many crews from the 1800s. The owl keeps popping up. That was its mascot, the PPP. So we hand out, it could be kitchen magnets, coasters. It's little things, little bits of memorabilia.
Now, how did the idea for a streetcar ride to announce Carnival come about?
Our organization actually kicked off initially as a walking club with the Crew of Clones, which some people might remember. This predates even Crew de Vue. A lot of organizations, once Clones, which was with the Contemporary Arts Center, stopped marching, then Crew de Vue. Instead of Crew de Vue, we went with the streetcar. What happened was one of our dear members held a birthday streetcar party, which you can do, you know, for her husband a few months before 12th night. And then the idea, like, boing, wait a minute, let's do this instead. And so we have our friends Phil and Estelle DeVergis to thank for that. 1983 was the kickoff of that particular event. This is a better way, I think, for us in terms of being able to spread the word that Carnival has begun. One thing that's very fun is right before 7 o'clock, before we actually board the streetcar, we have the Carnival Countdown. We gather at the front of the streetcar, and we have that previous year's queen and boss, and we have this giant purple, green, and gold ribbon and giant scissors, and we ask our wonderful drummer with the Storyville Stompers to do a countdown. So 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, cut the ribbon, and we announce, it's carnival time, and then we board the streetcar.
What happens along the ride?
The Storyville Stompers are in the back of the streetcar, and then a few minutes into the ride, and we ride the entire route of the St. Charles Avenue streetcar. So we go all the way down to Canal and come back around. During that time period, we have these giant king cakes. We have a queen, and our king is known of as a boss. This organization, by the way, started in 1878 to 1898, and it was resurrected, if you will, 1980-81. But anyway, our previous royalty are handing out slices of the king cake, and whoever gets the baby is that year's royalty.
You said you don't have a traditional king, but you call the king a boss.
Yes.
How did that come about?
From the original Funny 40 Fellows, but we're not all fellows in this go-round. In the reincarnation, if you will, of the crew, we are both women and men. But initially, it was a satirical organization that followed Rex on Mardi Gras Day. for a few years actually had a parade, but it was all guys then. Not anymore.
And they've got you as the captain. And
yes, but I have plenty of assistants. Trust me.
Any wishes for this year's Mardi Gras?
Well, always the weather. You know, we've had some cold, rainy 12 nights, but it's so much fun. Anybody who's a naysayer about carnival, shame on them.
Funny 40 Fellows crew captain Peggy Scott LaBorde. Thanks.
Thank you, Diane. Happy Mardi Gras.
And the same to you.
The Funny 40 Fellows will take their annual historic streetcar ride on Sunday, January 6th, boarding the streetcar at 7 p.m. sharp at the Willow Streetcar Barn. More info at funny40fellows.com. Across town, more 12th-night celebrations and a birthday party for the unofficial Maid of New Orleans. The medieval crew of Joan of Arc prepares for its walk through the French Quarter. There are some changes this year, and parade founder Amy Kirk-Duvarcin joins us with the details. Hey.
Hello.
You've got some key announcements to make. What's changing with this year's walking parade?
Well, as we go into our 11th year, I'm stepping back as captain. And I have two co-captains. This is how we roll. There's been three of us that we call the A-team. Me, Amy Kirk-Duvoisin, Amanda Helm, and Antoinette de Alteris. All three of us have been intertwined for at least the past 5 years, although they were with us from the beginning. But they've been really carrying the weight for several years. And there's been lots of talks that once we got through our first decade, I could pass the torch, no pun intended, to them. And I'm thrilled because they're wonderful in so many ways that I'm not. Antoinette makes costumes and designs our costumes. She's been our costume director. Amanda handles all of our membership and our website and many other things behind the scenes. Her home is actually our crew den. So they have really taken ownership of pieces and parts of this parade. And that's why you see it growing each year and becoming larger and more pageant-like is really due to their artistry and dedication and the ability to transform my vision into things that I wouldn't have imagined.
Now, you're passing the sword, but are you still going to have a hand in what happens with this group?
Very much. I certainly do want to build on more and other opportunities that we have now with our sister city in Orléans. We were invited to walk in the 2018 Orléans Parade, May 8th. There were about 10 of us who journeyed over to France for that and were wined and dined and put in a lot of very important ceremonies and were able to walk in the parade representing New Orleans. And our little sister version of their 589-year-old parade, our 10-year-old parade, was able to participate. So I'll be participating in some of these bigger picture ways, building community connections more and more and more. I never run out of ideas. So you'll notice that on the website, it will say founder, crew muse, keeper of the sword, and French Knight in the Order of Arts and Letters. So all those things point to me not going anywhere and just being more of a visionary leader.
Now, you know, it's been a decade, which is kind of hard to believe because time seems to have just flown by. But in that time, you must be so proud of what you've been able to do with what was an idea, a vision years ago to celebrate Joan. What are you most proud of?
It's maintained this vision that I had for being really a street theater experience. And I think we've created an art piece that everybody can feel part of.
So why do we celebrate Joan of Arc in New Orleans?
I actually should credit my husband who said this one night over dinner. You know, if there was no Joan of Arc, there would be no New Orleans. And it's true. It sounds pretty bold. But if Joan hadn't saved France, there would be no France. You know, when she was around, France wasn't yet France. It wasn't a country yet. So it was divided. And she ended the Hundred Years' War with her victory and lifting the siege of Orléans. Of course, our namesake. So we are here in the city of New Orleans with the Maid of Orléans, partly to thank.
Aha.
May sound like a stretch. She's a great and palpable reminder of our French heritage, and the parade wouldn't exist if there was not a golden statue of her in the French Quarter.
So tell us about this year's parade highlights.
Our court is representative of real historical characters in Joan's life. So our Joan of Arc, which is someone who is selected through an application process each year. Girls 16 to 19, local girls, can apply. They have to demonstrate leadership, some French language skills, and a real understanding of Joan of Arc and an understanding of how she is a symbol for the city. Our winner this year was Alyssa Fortier. She's a senior at Mount Carmel, and she's president of the French Honor Society. And she's also a descendant of Alcée Fortier, a famous French Creole folklorist. Our king is Alexander Vialou. He is the economist for the New Orleans Redevelopment Authority and the past president of Alliance Française. And our queen is Liz Williams, Elizabeth Williams, who is the president and founder of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. She has ties to France and French culinary traditions.
And you have something else new this year, a new starting point.
We will begin at the intersection of Bienville and Decatur. There's actually going to be a proclamation by Councilmember District C, Kristen Palmer Gisselson, who was our queen last year. We'll go up Bienville to Charters, and then we will continue our same route that we've had for years. We'll start with the toast from the Historic New Orleans Collection. And we're proud that for the past couple of years, the CIO Circle, which is the Young Professionals Group for HNOC, will be there to toast us.
And it all winds down with king cake.
We're celebrating Joan of Arc's birthday, so it's a big birthday party. It is 12th night, lucky for us, but it's her birthday. And so we have a combo king cake birthday cake. That's a beautiful golden cake that La Louisiane Bakery makes for us with beautiful golden frosting to reflect the golden Joni on the pony statue that inspired this parade. So we have that for our royalty, and we encourage people to bring their own king cake. This has always been a really fun part of the event where we gather on the steps of Washington Artillery Park across from Jackson Square, the cathedral in front of us and the river behind us, and we all share king cake together. So it's a wonderful way to start the season and celebrate Joan of Arc's birthday. She's over 600 years old now, still going strong, and we hope there are at least 600 pieces of cake to go around.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Amy Kirk Duboisin, founder of the crew of Joan of Arc. Thanks.
Merci.
The Joan of Arc Parade walks Sunday, January 6th, beginning at Decatur and Bienville at 7 p.m. More info is online at joanofarcparade.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The Danny Barker Banjo and Guitar Festival strikes a saintly chord this year at its milestone anniversary celebration. The Young Festival honoring the legacy of the NEA jazz master, singer, songwriter, storyteller, and author turns five this year. Joining me to talk about Danny Barker's musical contributions are festival producer and guitarist Detroit Brooks, photographer Eric Waters, and WWNO's Fred Gaston. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
How are you today?
Hey, this festival is gaining traction in the community. Tell me, what are your thoughts about its five-year milestone? Let's start with you, Eric.
It's been overwhelming. I remember having a conversation with Detroit about 6-7 years ago. He had this idea about starting the Danny Barker Banjo Guitar Festival, and I told him, well, let's go for it, you know. And I had no idea that it was going to evolve into what is now existent, and it's due to the hard work of Detroit Brooks, his commitment, his dedication, and his sacrifice. We hope to have continued success. We look forward to the future.
Now, tell us about this great musician, Danny Barker. Who was he, and how did your paths cross? Let's start with Fred.
I was lucky enough to get to hear Danny a lot, of course, through the years after moving to New Orleans in 1984. But when I really got to know him was a series of long interviews he was gracious enough to give me in 1993, right here in this very studio. What a wonderful storyteller. His line when I first met him was, if it's good for jazz, I'm there. And he meant by that he was feeling kind of bad that day, but he came for the interview anyway. He ended up talking to me for over an hour. And from that, I got so many wonderful stories and insights into Mr. Barker and what he meant to this community musically and culturally, and had an opportunity after that to have several more long conversations with him. Thankfully, those two long interviews plus a Roger Dickerson interview that the great pianist and composer did with Danny. Also, the Grammy-winning producer Scott Billington did a wonderful interview with Danny. So we have a lot of his voice, and that is put into talk sessions that we have at the Danny Barker Festival, which is headquartered this year at the New Orleans Jazz Museum at the foot of Esplanade Avenue, commonly known around town as the old U.S. Mint, a wonderful place to hear talk about and music about Danny Barker. His stories are so great. I was able to get some classics from him. One of my favorites is how when he first got to New York, he was scuffling for work, and he called Jelly Roll Morton.
He called me hometown. He said, hometown? He said, I got some work. He said, you just got here, but I need some musicians. They ain't going to play my music. I just want you to find me five cockroaches. That's what he called musicians. Get me five cockroaches and have them here. I need a drummer, saxophone player, or clarinet, a trombone, and you. And don't play, don't worry about how these people up here play, because they don't know nothing about jazz. They don't have the feeling for jazz. They're in a hurry. They're playing that Chick Webb music for the Lindy Hoppers. It's molding that to jazz. I said, yes. And Mr. Jelly said, it's Carmen Jelly, hometown. We like relatives. You understand? These people never had a real decent meal in their life. They never sat down and ate a plate of gumbo and roast rabbit. They don't know nothing about it.
At the festival, one of the things that people have a chance to do is hear his voice and telling his stories himself. Also, filmmaker Matt Martinez has a lot of great segments, and there are photographs that Eric has taken. So it's a multimedia experience finding out about the life of this great musician and just a great historian, storyteller, author, cultural figure in New Orleans. I think one of the most important New Orleanians of the 20th century.
And Detroit, did Danny Barker influence you as a musician?
Oh, yes, he did. He influenced the majority of the musicians that's playing today. He had opportunity when he left to become, you know, a star or whatever, as Louis, you know, Sidney. But he chose to come back and educate the kids about the culture. So he had a mission. That's one of the things that inspired me and is the reason for this festival today.
Now, how did you meet Danny Barker?
Well, it's a long story. I was married into the Cagnoletti family, and Ernie Cagnoletti was a trumpet player, played with Preservation Hall. And he used to travel, you know, abroad with Preservation Hall. And when he came home, he would give these big parties at his house. And Danny was his neighbor. Danny was about two blocks. He stayed on Buchanan. Danny was on Sears, I think. And he would give these parties, and Danny would come to his house. And majority of the times, he'd be telling his stories because he was a great storyteller, people laughing and stuff. So, but we would be playing music with my brother-in-law, Edward Johnson, who was also a trombone player, Leroy Jones, you know. And so we would be playing music, and Danny would come and play. He would come and talk to the fellas and tell us about music and stuff.
And did you learn anything from Danny that you apply to your life today?
You have Greg Stafford, the trumpet player. You have Dr. Michael White, who's clarinetist. Leroy Jones, who's a clarinet player, a trumpet player. And all these people come from under the umbrella of Danny. What we did learn was to have our own, you know, create our own style. I don't play banjo like Danny, and I don't think no one ever will, even though you mimic what he do. You can never have the character and the spirit that he put into his banjo. So I've done something different, but I still base what I do up off of what Danny has taught us. This is a song I love to hear Danny do. I don't do it as Danny would, because Danny has something special. But it's When You're Smiling. When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you. When you're laughing, keep on laughing, and the sun will come shining through.
This is Eric. I'd like to say that Danny was a humanist and a humorist. He had great stories. He had great presence. And when he started talking, you listened. But Detroit is being very humble. I don't know how Danny influenced him, but Danny thought enough of him to give him his banjo.
Wow.
That says a lot about Detroit Brooks and also his commitment to Danny Barker and his contributions. Like he mentioned Danny Barker in terms of Louis Armstrong and Sidney Bechet. Danny may be or should be the third recognized musician to come out of New Orleans. But like Detroit said, the others left and never came back. But Danny came back, and his contribution is overwhelming.
How will you share and preserve Danny's legacy with the six-day festival? What's on tap?
We have some of the top New Orleans artists playing at the festival. Leroy Jones, Greg Stafford, Detroit Brooks, all bring bands there. We'll be playing on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 11th, 12th, and 13th at the New Orleans Jazz Museum during the day. We'll also have a series of events at outside venues, including Prime Example on Wednesday, Snug Harbor on Thursday night, and the Bullets Sports Bar on Saturday night, so people can have a chance to get out in the evenings and check out some of the great music made by not just our cream of the crop New Orleans artists, but international players such as Claude Carré from Haiti, a great guitarist and banjoist who came last year and made a wonderful contribution to the festival, and Fabrizio Sotti, great Italian guitarist who will be coming to New Orleans this year to share his talents. These people demonstrate that Danny Barker's influence is not just regional or national, it's international, and he has had a profound effect on musicians all around the world.
And on opening night, you have some help from a high-profile player with the New Orleans Saints this year?
Absolutely. Mr. Drew Brees is kind enough to sign a guitar. Let me explain a little bit about this guitar. Two New Orleanians who later moved to California started a guitar company, Schecter Guitars, and our big Saints fans have for the last 15 years or so produced a limited edition 15 or 20 a year Saints guitars. And they produce these for the Saints to put in their Hall of Fame and also for local charities to use to fundraise to help the community. Their way of giving back to New Orleans and showing their love of the Saints. We have a beautiful New Orleans Saints guitar from Schecter this year, signed by the great Drew Brees. And that is going to be auctioned at the Patron Party on Tuesday night, January 8th, a one-of-a-kind souvenir of one of the great Saints seasons as it unfolds.
What would you say is Danny Barker's most important gift to the city of New Orleans?
Re-energizing second-line bands, brass bands.
Well, I agree with Eric. I say that Danny was one of the most important gifts himself, with his time, his talent, and his vision for the youth.
So in the end, we will get a real feel for who this great musician was.
Yes, yes.
Guitarist Detroit Brooks, photographer Eric Waters, and WWNN's Fred Kasten. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
The 5th Annual Danny Barker Banjo and Guitar Festival kicks off 6 days of festivities running January 8th through 13th. The festival is headquartered at the New Orleans Jazz Museum and includes a series of events at venues around the city. More information is online at DannyBarkerFestival.com. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.